Question was asked, when we're looking for a community to bring up our children and our family, should we prefer a community that is more strict, a community that is more uniform, homogeneous? Should we prefer a community that's more open, a community that gives our children different opportunities and different choices? So before addressing your question, I would like to first go off to a few other topics and then come back to this, okay? The Torah tells us a mitzvah of a ben sorer umore. The Torah tells us that there is a concept of a rebellious child who starts stealing, who starts being a gangster out in the street, stealing from his parents, stealing from other people. He's joining gangs, he's eating raw meat, he's drinking wine, and it seems very clear that he's going to end up to be a very big danger to society. So the Torah tells us there can be a circumstance where even though he has not yet committed the most grave crimes, he is executed. And then the Talmud has a whole chapter telling you the details required in order for this to happen. And when you go through the details, it seems impossible for such a thing ever to happen. It says, and one opinion in the end of that chapter in Tractate Sanhedrin, in Masechet Sanhedrin, is Lo haya v'lo nivra, never happened that a kid was executed as a ben sorer umore. However, we do learn things from that tractate, from that chapter, that perek in Masechet Sanhedrin. One of the things we learn, it says over there that when the parents bring the child to court, so they bring him together, and then they say, Beneinu ze, this son of ours, Einenu shomea bekoleinu, he's not listening to our voice. So the Talmud says, what does that mean, is not listening to our voice? Says the Talmud, there has to be a single voice. So the Talmud says, what if the wife has a high-pitched voice and the husband has a deep bass? Well, then they don't have a united voice. So he can't be a ben sorer umore. The Talmud says there's a concept. There has to be a united voice. The child has to hear the same message from father and mother. If you have a situation where the father's pulling this way and the mother's pulling that way and the kid walks out confused, don't blame the kid. Don't take him to court. Take the parents to counseling. So the Talmud, again, is teaching us a concept. And when we discuss the questions of where we should bring up our children, so we have to be a unified front. I usually don't have these conversations with a young man who's engaged. I will only have these conversations with a couple, because the first point is that the basic element of success in educating a child is that the parents have to try as much as possible to be a unified front. So whatever we're going to discuss now, you have to know the first most basic need that you have in educating your kid is that you and your spouse are in agreement. And this is step one. If the two are in agreement to send to this community, to this school, to the other community, to that school, they have a much higher chance of success than any other decision. Okay, so rule number one, the couple have to be united. Now there are going to be differences in our hashkafa to some degree, that we're different people, we have differences, but as an overall rule, we have to strive to be united. That's number one. Number two, you want to be united with the school. There's a third voice in your children's education. So I'm going to give you a few far-fetched examples. And I want to draw the picture that wherever you go, there are going to be things you don't agree with. Okay? So parent number one calls me and tells me, my daughter came to school. It's the first day of school. And they called us, they're sending her home. Why are they sending her home? Because the whole community knows we go by the halachic ruling of Rav Eliashiv, and her glasses had colored screws They were gold glasses with silver screws. And Rav Eliashiv said, that's immodest. We didn't notice there were silver screws till they sent her home. But the whole community seems to know that silver screws are immodest. The whole community? Well, I guess there were other girls sent home that day. So I guess not the whole community knows. But now the whole community knows. Uniform, huh? Just a second. So we began with the idea that going to community where everyone conforms to one path can have its challenges. So that was story number one. Now we move on to story number two. Parent calls, says, my child came home for Pesach, and we asked him what he learned for Pesach. And the child said, we learned about Yom Ha'atzmaut, Israel's Independence Day. So the parent said, but Pesach is this week. Did you learn about the Jews in Egypt? So he says, we learned songs of the partisan. So the parent says, but what about Pesach? I understood you learned about Israel's War of Independence, but what about Pesach? So the kid goes, that's old news. We learned about the new redemption. That's much more important. Yom Ha'atzmaut is much more important than Pesach. Story number two. Story number three. I meet with the rabbi of a certain school. The rabbi of the school says, can you help me? I said, what's the issue? He said, our school promotes free thinking and the children are given a breath. And so many children, by the time they're in fourth grade or fifth grade, have iPhones. They all have smartphones. Now, how can you educate a child to a life of Torah and to be pure in their thought and in their speech and in their behavior when they're being given every filth under the sun? If this one has a filter, the next one doesn't have a filter. And at the end of the day, they're being exposed to everything. Now, this is a story I heard on many levels. So what I'm trying to illustrate with the stories is not to say that this is wrong and that's wrong and the other one's wrong, but rather we have to realize that from a distance, sometimes it seems like conformity can have its strengths. We can sometimes think that the idea that everyone's homogeneous and they're all working with the same belief system has its strengths. We have to realize it also has its challenges. Sometimes we can say being open has its strengths. Like a person came to me this week and he said, If the educational system does not prepare the child to stand up to the challenges of being in a secular army, so then that's a failing on the part of the educational system. So I said to the person, I don't think you ever served in the army. I was in a yeshiva where there were top students and they had the preparation of a system that prepared them for the army. And I can tell you that the challenges are beyond what I believe I could handle. I don't think it's so simple to assume that proper preparation can prepare a person for many of the challenges religiously that he might face. If he goes to Nachal HaCharedi, so he has a very good environment much of the time. However, not everyone has that possibility. Not everyone knows that that's where they should go. And you don't know how long that bubble will last for of Nachal HaCharedi. And even there, it's not so simple. But over there, you can argue your case. But to say that the educational system should prepare a person, I've accompanied hundreds of students in and out of the army and visited them and given classes in the army bases and traveled to the bases from the north to the south, giving classes and trying to strengthen soldiers and being in touch with soldiers and sending daily SMSs to soldiers and working with people at the front lines. No, you can't tell me that the educational system can stand up to the challenges that a person faces in the army. So the theory from afar is very good. So long as you're not dealing with the brutal facts on the ground, so then theories work very well. The problem is when you actually have to deal with the reality. And then suddenly we have to realize the limitations of the theory in the face of reality. So that's why I want to be careful. When we say that there's a benefit to homogeneous education, I know children who are not religious today because they claim the reason is because they lived in a community where there was one choice. Everyone sent to the same school. Everyone believed in the same thing. Everyone went the same path. Everyone played the same games in the afternoon. And they wanted to be different. And there was no room for them to be different on that kibbutz. Because the whole kibbutz sent to the same school. There was one school. It was a small kibbutz. Everyone celebrated Yom HaTzmut the same way. Everyone was participating in the same Bnei Akiva. It was a small kibbutz. So on the one end, it's a small family. It was a religious kibbutz. It's a very small family, but the whole kibbutz believed in the same thing, the same educational system. They had nowhere to go. And when they didn't feel comfortable with that school, with that shul, they had no other alternative. So they just left. So I'm just saying this idea that a homogeneous community gives strength, it gives its own challenges. And so the first question that one has to ask himself is, where can I partner? Where can I blend? Where will I be comfortable and I won't contradict the education that I'm giving my children on the key points? Meaning everywhere you go, you will find challenges and you will find points which you differ with in the educational community or in the community at large. There will always be points you disagree with them on. There will always be points where you feel like this is ridiculous. And you have to ask yourself question number one is where you and your spouse stands, that you're at peace, that you're both in agreement. And then together you have to analyze the question of where can we fit in and blend and work as partners with the community. To join a community because they have a certain strength and then spend your time on the sidelines telling your kids, I know they believe in that, but I really don't believe that. I know they say that, but we really don't go that way. You're confusing the kid. It's not fair to a child. You can temper very slightly the system you're sending your child to, but you shouldn't conflict with it. So you have to back it. So that's the next question. Before you come to the question of which is better, there's a practical question. Which can you and your wife work with? The idea that theoretically it would be much better to go to a Satmar community, your wife shave your head, your kids shave their head and grow payas, and you walk around in the sweltering heat in black clothing might be true. But I'm not sure you could manage there. Okay, so I also couldn't manage there. I don't think it's a better education, but I'm saying even if you thought it was a better education, that doesn't mean it could work for you. So you have to be practical in the question of where you could match. That being said, if once upon a time one could argue the question of whether education should be more open or more closed, today I think you have a responsibility to your kids to try to bring them up in a sheltered environment where they can grow with a perspective of what's right and wrong. And that is becoming far more difficult. The Torah trains us there are things that are aberrations, that are things that are disgusting, there are things that are beautiful, and there are things that we aspire to. The pluralistic society today that gives children in the second grade storybooks that speak about John's two dads, Bessie's two moms, where they want to develop a society where children believe that it is just as normal to have a father and a mother as to have two fathers and two mothers, is destructive. It's sodomite. To tell children that it's normal. No one's saying how you should approach the people who have certain weaknesses. But when you educate children, one of the most basic gifts you can give a child is the perspective, how do I look at the world? To start telling a child what they did now on Yom HaTzma'ut is not only unethical and unkind, it is crazy. To take people who are mourning over the loss of a loved one and tell them that they should stand in the same hall as the murderer's family and say, you both lost a loved one, is not normal. I don't care what people say in terms of being liberal and pluralistic. The Torah teaches us a concept of goel adam, the idea that when relatives lose a loved one, their blood should boil, and if they're normal people, they should want to kill the murderer. Yes, that's a normal reaction. When someone's relative is killed, so the Torah says that ki yecham, a person's heart should boil. Part of loving someone, part of connecting to someone, is that we care if that person is killed. We don't look at the murderer and say, oh, it must be your upbringing that did this to you. I can love you, I can respect you, I can stand with you. And when, you know, they did that this year. There was an organization that said, you can't just, on the day that you mourn the lost loved ones, you also have to show your care for the terrorist families. I'm telling you what happened here in the state of Israel this year. I think it's crazy. I think it's just not normal. I think it's there's something warped. There's something warped. It's not in the range of normalcy. Again, one of the gifts we give children when we bring them up is the understanding that there is a right, there is a wrong, there is a good, there is a bad. There is something we do, there is something we don't do. Part of what a child should gain is when he comes from this house, he knows in our house we don't do that. A child will ask you, why can't I litter? My friends throw their garbage on the floor. So you can tell them it's not respectful, you can tell them it's not nice, you could tell them it's stealing, you could tell them it's harming everyone else, you could tell them you're a part of this family, and in our house we don't do that. Why can't I chew gum on the streets? My friends chew gum on the streets. You could tell them you look like a cow, you could tell them it's uneducated, you could tell them our family doesn't do that. You could sing them the song, the gum chewing boy, the cud chewing cow. There is a difference. I see it now. It's the intelligent look on the face of the cow. That's what our 11th grade teacher taught us when one of us was chewing gum in class. But the idea that a child feels a certain pride, I stand for something. The idea that I can accept that other people are different, that doesn't mean I lose my identity. And education today has become so challenging because children are exposed. Before I knew what an iPhone was, my kids came home and said, Abba, can you get one of those phones that you move your finger on? And I said, how do you know those phones exist? Right? We live in a community where I don't see them. I'm talking about a decade ago. We live in, you're going to a school where no one has them. How do you know those phones exist? Come on, Abba, everyone knows, right? Everyone knows. So, nonetheless, there are values that you want to give your children, and that's part of the gift you can give your children. And in that sense, it is worthwhile to look for an environment, a community, an educational system that will shelter them. We're not looking to expose them to all the filth that's in the world. When they've developed themselves, when they have a good anchor and a good perspective on right and wrong, then they can be exposed and deal with it. But that's only after they're 16, 18, not when they're young. I have a very good friend who kept arguing with me that I have to expose my little kids to the internet. And I said to him, you know, until I was 18, no one had email. When I was 18, 19, that's when you started having dial-up. And I was taking a college course. I needed to have an email account. So I opened up an account on a dial-up connection. I said, and I'm managing fine. So why do my kids need to be online? Why do I need to give them that Yetzer Hara? They're going to reach the age of 16, 17, 18. They'll deal with it. At age 10, 11, 12, let them have the innocence of playing with a ball. Let them have a good time of running in the park and running in the woods and having a beautiful childhood where they marvel. You know, my kids play with bugs. You heard of that? Playing with bugs? You know what it means to sit down in the grass and start looking? You see that bug? My kids can spend a half hour tracking bugs. That's a beautiful childhood. I'm saying they enjoy nature. When was the last time you walked with a kid and he said to you, look at the different shapes of the clouds. It's so beautiful. I never noticed that. But the kids, they'll wake me in the morning and say, Abba, come look at the sunrise. Okay, that's because they're not looking at a screen all day. They're looking at life. They're looking at the world. They're appreciating the world. They have the years later on to deal with the challenges of having one of these instruments in their pocket. So there's one of the gifts you can give them is a perspective on right and wrong. When we approach the question of what community and what school we want to send our children to, and this is something I encourage couples to do together, we have to make a list of what are the top five values that we want our children to have. Ask yourself, what's number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? And you'll always have to compromise, but put them in order. What's number 1? What's number 2? Think about the values. And then based on that, you start asking yourself, can I work with a school that teaches those values? What are my choices? And then you move forward. The idea that sheltered society is beneficial, yes. Uniform society, questionable. Questionable whether you can work with that society, whether you could be uniform in a society. Will they accept you? It's another question. There are societies which might be beautiful, but they won't accept me. There was a shul I went to where I loved the people. I loved the davening. I admired the community, but they didn't love me. They wouldn't talk to me. It was like I didn't exist. They would talk to one another, and I didn't exist. I'd come to shul, I never got an aliyah. I sat there for half a year. At the end of davening, I asked someone if he wants a chavrusa. He said no, and walked away. It was like they were only within themselves. They were a community who was known for that. I found out later that they wouldn't accept anyone from the outside. So if I wanted to daven there, they didn't kick me out. But I never got so much as in anything. Meaning I tried talking to them, I tried learning about their customs, I tried nothing. Cold. Cold. Within themselves they were warm. You'd see them greeting one another. Beautiful community. But closed. They didn't let me in. I was a youngster, I must be 19, 20. The yeshiva I learned in was right next to their shul. I would come early. The evening there was like 5:30. I'd come at 5, I'd sit and learn, I'd try. Nothing. Nothing. Gornished. Never an invitation for a meal. Never. Nothing, nothing. You have a young man who's davening with you for 6 months and you won't even talk to him. It's like, they'll talk to one another, they won't talk to me. Okay, so go join such a community. I'm just saying, there's not, what can you do? So the fact that you admire a community doesn't mean you can become a part of it. I'm saying there's not every community that we see in admiration means that we can be a part of that community. These are things to consider. And a lot of it is also a question of integration. The first point we spoke about, who can I work with? And when we speak about sheltered, so that has to be done very, very intelligently. It's not so simple. Because I'll end with a story. You heard the story about the goat? There was a man who wanted to bring up his son in the utmost purity. So he took him on an island and he brought him up and he only taught him Torah. And when the child was 18, he figured, let me bring the child to the mainland. It's time to start teaching him. The child had learned about chickens and about goats and about sacrifices. And he had lived a life of purity. They come to the mainland. They park their boat. They start walking. And across the street, there's a woman walking. So the child never saw a woman before. So he says, Dad, what's that? So his father says, that's a very special type of goat. So the kid goes, that's a beautiful goat. Can you get me one of those, Dad? You see, nature is nature. You can shelter the child and bring him up without knowing what's reality, but they're still going to want that special type of goat when they see it. So sheltering a child is not as simple as just taking them to a sheltered place and thinking that will resolve my issues. I'm saying even in a sheltered environment, things have to be done in an intelligent way. It's not that simple. I'm saying bringing up a child in such a society involves a lot of learning how to balance that society. And again, the first question is, can you work with that society?